from stpetecatalyst.com.
Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? It's the Catalyst Sessions. My name is Bill DeYoung, and thanks for checking in with this very special guest tonight. She's a theater artist, and her name is Kristen Clifford. And I want to quote, there she is. Here's the press release that when Kristen came on board American Stage, 42 years after it was founded, back in March, they said that the position includes collaborating with Stephanie Gillard in all matters related to the artistic life of American Stage, including assisting in producing the main stage season at American Stage in the Park, contributing to the planning of future seasons, and taking a lead role in the company's 21st Century Voices Emerging Plays initiative, which kind of squeaked by in February, right before Kristen got here. You came in, hey, Kristen.
Hi.
You came in March 9th. It was early March. So were you just here when this thing happened?
I started the last week of February. So that was the week of 21st Century, our new play festival. And then the pandemic fell upon us soon after. So,
yeah. What was that like? Hey, what a great new job, a great new town. Hey, wait a minute, everybody's running to the bunker. That must have sucked.
Sucked is one way to put it.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, you're the first person to hold the position of associate artistic director there, which I, you know, it seems like a no-brainer to me. Yeah, bringing another talented person, right? But how and why did they suddenly decide that they, you know, we need an associate, we need somebody else? What was that process like for them? I mean, I know Stephanie's great, but she doesn't do everything down there. They needed another key in the lock, as it were. How'd that happen?
Sure. Stephanie Gillard has been wisely working to build a leadership team at American Stage, so that that there's a group of people who are working to ensure the quality of the company across the boards, right? Yeah. And the team of us kind of hold each other accountable and keep the company true. So myself, Jared Fox, the director of production, Tiffany Ford, the director of education and outreach, and then Stephanie Snyder and Stephanie Gillard, all of us work together as a team to come together and do a lot of greater decision-making and planning and strategizing together as a team, which is really quite wonderful.
Is every place like that? I mean, or is there sort of one big high holy buck stops here person in an office in most places saying, yeah, you can give me your ideas, but the final decision is mine? Or is it always teamwork in theater?
Well, I mean, theater is inherently collaborative, right? But I would say no, not every company is like that. I was very much used to the two-headed monster, if you will, of sort of the artistic director and the executive director or general manager, however the place is structured, and those being sort of the people that make majority of the decisions. Yeah. So it's very refreshing to be in a company that is creating a culture of relying on a group of people and really sharing in the leadership of the company. So it's really exciting.
When you came in back in late February, early March, I mean, what were your immediate plans? What was the first thing on your plate? I'm going to say that probably didn't happen. What was going on there? I'm doing this first. Can't wait. What was that?
Well, I was really excited just to get to know everybody and to really start to understand how the company works and understand what the structures were in place for how we do the magic that we do. And of course I've been able to do that, but I think that the hardest thing about, you know, coming in at the time that I came in was the fact that, I started to learn all of the things, and then immediately all of the things changed. And we're still doing what we do, which is tell powerful stories and meaningful stories, but we're doing it in a whole new way than we're used to. So it's been a whole new learning curve.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, okay. Segue for me. You had the very first virtual stage this weekend, and I'm going to show the folks at home a photograph because it was completely amazing when you did Romeo and Juliet. This is it's Shakespeare Light is what the series is called, right? Let's get this picture up here. And you did the whole thing virtually. It was an hour. And I, how big was this cast you were wrangling there? It looked like 30 people at one time.
There was a cast of nine, and
pretty
much everybody except for Romeo and Juliet, you know, doubled. They played more than one role.
Oh, sure, right.
Of course. So yeah, they were great. They were made up of a great cross section of our apprentice company, former apprentices, local actors, star actors who have come and gone and been a part of the American stage production history. So it was a really, really great mix of people to be working with.
Did you find that actors, the local actors, were in a way kind of chomping at the bit to get back to work, to do something like, oh, I'd love to do that. In other words, was everybody sort of into the idea? Here's your cast here, by the way.
Oh, that's so great. The Capulet's feast.
This is what it looked like on my screen right here.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So, I mean, were they like, oh yeah, that sounds great, because they haven't been using those muscles in a while.
Yeah. I know everybody is game and hungry and maybe a little bit cautious and dubious about this new format that we're working in, understandably, because it is new. But yes, very, very excited to be jumping back into rehearsal. We all kept commenting during rehearsal last week of, oh, this is just so great to be doing the art again.
Doing the art again, exactly what I meant, yeah. Take us through, I mean, it seemed fairly flawless, and you know, except for your usual sort of buffering things that we're probably having right now, that people are going, what's wrong with that? But what seems to me to, it must have been a logistical nightmare, like sitting there, you know, like the guy in the TV booth trying to run a sports event with 12 cameras going on. Where were you when all this was happening? Were you the one in the control room pulling up the faders and bringing the cameras online?
I was in the virtual backstage for sure. I was sort of on standby as an understudy just in case somebody lost power or lost connection so I could jump in and read and keep the story going.
There's an unforeseen problem.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a new kind of theatrical technical difficulty. But our stage manager, Rachel Harrison, was the one doing all of the hosting of the Zoom platform and then helping people rename their characters, helping them, turn off their cameras if they had perished in the scene and things like that. So there were a couple people on the back.
Still hanging around if the character died. I could see that. Right. But it was... Is it literally just everybody's cameras on all the time and you do your lines? But it's, I love the fact that whole sort of Brady Bunch thing with the cubes, you know, would change and disappear depending on the scene. So somebody, and maybe that's Rachel, right, was just directing it live, you know, pulling up, in other words, what I saw, me, the viewer.
Sure. Well, I'm glad it felt like it flowed naturally and it worked well because it was highly choreographed. And so if I were choreographing movement and exits and entrance on a live stage in the theater, it was very similar to that. I was choreographing when people would come into a scene, when they would go out, when they would mute their, or unmute their microphone so that they could just call into a scene like the nurse did a couple of times. So everything was very rehearsed and meticulously planned.
I don't know, I'm fascinated by this, so bear with me. I mean, did you find during rehearsals there were like snafus that you couldn't have foreseen? You know, don't let that dog walk into the scene, you know, or you know, did anybody ever lose power or, you know, get offline or anything that happened?
It did. It certainly did. But every time that happened during rehearsal, it, you know, not only gave us a good laugh, but then we realized, oh, we should have a plan for this and have a contingency in case someone's cat comes across or what have you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about other virtual things that are going on. I mean, you've got, you know, I was talking with Stephanie whenever I spoke with her last about, the podcasts. The sort of creative collaborations, I think it's called, and the various sort of little videos that are going on. But what else is in the pipeline right now? You're going to do five Shakespeare's, or is it just four?
There's four Shakespeares in the month of June. And then more virtual stories to come. In July, we're going to be doing new shorts, which are short 10-minute plays or thereabouts. And then in August, we're going to be doing the living room plays, which are scenes and monologues that we've selected from various plays over our history, which I'm excited about. So it's a chance to revisit some of our favorites. You know, in addition to those stories, gosh, we have so much going on. It's really, really exciting time. Even though that we can't be live, we're also doing things like having the staff create something called Creative Tips. And those are fun little, you know, things that we're dropping in from time to time, just about, you know, life skills and different things like that. We've also got our podcast, which we've been doing for quite a while, but So just last night, actually, Stephanie hosted our first creative conversation, which is just an opportunity for Stephanie to share about what we're doing at American Stage, how we're dealing with the pandemic, talking about how we're planning a physical return, when that should happen, and all the things that, you know, all the questions that audiences might have on their minds. And then we're taking all this and also sharing it on our podcast. So in case you missed it, you can usually tune into our podcast and get a taste of what we did live on the screen.
Well, let me just pick your brain for a second. I mean, is there, you're talking about doing the living room place in August or yeah. Okay. So nobody's planning on being back really live on the American Stage main stage in August, at least September. It's always a hard question. I always get to this place with people. What are you thinking about reopening? Nobody friggin' knows. Nobody knows that, you know. Well, we'll see what happens, you know.
Right.
You know, I know, let me think about this for a second. I know that the concern for theater companies, it's the same for, say, the opera and the orchestra and the other nonprofits and the other, you know, arts organizations in town. It's twofold, really. You want your subscriber base and the people and your fans, if you will, the people who put butts in the seats, to know that you're still here, that it's not your idea that you're not producing right now. And we're still here and we're still vibrant and we're doing what we can to reach out. That's one. And the other thing is, of course, the people who give you money. We're still active. We're still vibrant. You know, don't forget about it. I mean, I hate to sound so mercenary about it, but it does come down to that, that the people who make donations, the people who, you know, pay for things, they need to know. I mean, wouldn't you say that's true? I sense an awkward pause here, but I mean, that's the truth. It's kind of a combination of those things.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it's really important to stay connected during this time. It was a decision. We could have chosen not to do all the things that we're doing and just take this time to, you know, regroup and save our pennies and that kind of thing. But it was important to us to be able to continue to deliver on the excellent storytelling that we do and to keep our classes going for education. It wasn't the right decision for us to not do those things because we care so deeply about our community and we want to stay a part of it, even though we can't physically be together right now. And yeah, that is the big question on everyone's mind is when, and we all are feeling the same way. We all really, really, really want to come back and we miss you. And there's just, you know, I'll have to quote a line from Romeo and Juliet. I'll have to say, just like the friar said to Romeo, wisely and slow, they stumble that run fast. Because we, you know, we could, rush, but what good would that do? We're taking our time, we're making plans, we're consulting, and doing all the things that we need to do to make sure that people are going to feel safe and ready and comfortable and make them feel sure that we're doing everything in a healthy way when we're ready to come back. And it'll take some time because you can't just jumpstart a show, right? You've got to, you got to cast, you got to build, you got to do all the things.
Well, let me phrase it this way. I mean, is American Stage ready should it come to this? And I don't know if you can speak to this. You may have to talk to the committee, you know, talk to the everybody. But, okay, you can open September at half capacity with everybody 6 feet apart. Would you be prepared to do that? Or are you just going to wait until we can have the whole experience again, folks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate question. What we've been focusing on right now is just for the summer months, just for this time, June, July, and August.
Right.
But, and we're constantly sort of as a team revisiting, you know, in sort of 2 week, 4 week chunks and sort of looking where we think we might be able to go come September, come October. And I mean, certainly our fingers are crossed that we're going to be able to bring something back to the stage this fall. It's just going to be a matter of how, when, and what, and where, and all the things. There's so many moving parts to producing theater, and we just want to be making sure that we're not making announcements and then having to backpedal on them because we're not quite ready, or because, you know, this little puzzle piece over here didn't quite fit in right yet. So, yeah, lots and lots and lots of factors to consider.
How about this? And tell me if somebody's brought this up in a virtual meeting already. Footloose is still out there floating around somewhere. Maybe you do it in the fall in the park when the weather's cool. And that way, you know, it's outdoors and maybe keep people apart if you have to some way. But has anybody kind of brought that up? Like, oh, let's if we can't come back until the weather's cooler, let's kick it off with the park show. Big, have fireworks, da-da-da, cotton candy, the whole, you know, all 9 yards. I don't know. It sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. No, Bill, we've considered all the things.
I suspect you have.
Not to diminish the question at all. Of course. Yeah. I mean, we would love nothing more than to come back strong with Park in the fall, and it could be a good time, but you know, we're also considering hurricane season, you know, weather is a factor. And then,
oh, that is a thing too. Oh yeah.
You know, the Grand Prix is going to be in October now. That's rescheduled to October. So there's a lot of things that could make that hard. So yeah, we'll just have to see.
You know, the next person that says to me, you know, Bill, these are unprecedented times, I feel like I want to slap them, but at the same time, it's so true. There's no handbook for how to deal with this. And here we are, it's mid-June already. We started doing these shows, the Catalyst Session, I think we're right around 50 now, the last week in March. Yeah. And we've been doing it, you know, 5 days a week, thinking that, oh, I don't know, it'll last a couple of weeks. And I mean, here we are, and no learning in the sun. You know, it's my mask voice there. Where are you from?
I am originally from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I thought it was Ohio. I you know, was sneaking around doing a little research, and I had a feeling. Was it always theater for you at an early age? Were you one of those kids? Yeah, I know where I'm going.
Yep, you hit it pretty much. I was scrubbing the floors with my curly red Annie wig on, singing "It's a Hard Knock Life" as a kid. So yeah, totally true.
Well, you have an MFA in directing from Iowa State, right? Did I get that right? Okay, that's why I knew it was the Midwest.
The University of Iowa. Yeah.
What did I say? Iowa State.
You said Iowa State.
But. See, I don't know anything about the Midwest. My hand just went there. Okay. So University of Iowa. But I was going to say that I imagine the mechanics of directing can be somewhat taught. But don't you need to be out there in the trenches, which you've done, by the way, to really get a feel for the intricacies of working so very closely with different people, different shows, you know, show-specific, artist-specific, state performance space. In other words, they can't really teach you the art of, they can teach you the mechanics, but they can't really teach you how to do it. You have to go out and learn how to do it. Wouldn't you say that's true?
I would say that. I mean, I started out as an actor, and I believe that some of the best directors are actors because they have that muscle memory. Sure. They've had that experience to speak to. But yeah, I mean, when I went to graduate school, I made a very conscious decision that this is what I want to focus on. And I went to school because I wanted to incubate. I wanted that opportunity to just go and experiment and try things and work with playwrights, which was really important and really valuable. But then, yes, getting back out and having professional experience with different kinds of theater, with different artists is so, so, so important because there's so many different ways to approach it. And most people probably don't realize that there's a lot of craft that goes into directing. But it's really, really true. There's lots of different styles out there.
You find it more satisfying than, say, being an actor or, you know, a dramaturg or something like that, you know, the other hats that you've worn. So like, yeah, I'm a director. That's it. Or an administrator, you know, It must be really satisfying, though, to see your like your baby come to life on the stage in the theater. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think? Like, director? Yeah.
I love it. I love how you say theater. You just have to say it that way. Theater. yeah, I think I think there's always a part of me who will always be a performer and always love that. But I think as a director, there is a deep satisfaction in being the one that brings the group together and sort of is the audience eye that kind of that coalesces and is the glue between all the pieces. I think I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. And I really do look at it as a person who is almost more like a facilitator. Like I'm certainly not the kind of person that comes in and say, you will enact my vision. That's what you will do. Like, that's not my style. I love the collaboration.
The collaborative thing.
I love working. Yeah. That's what it's all about really for me.
Oh my gosh. I have another picture. We'll start with this one because it turns out that two of my favorite American stage shows over the last couple of years were both directed by you.
Okay.
Aww. Yeah. This is The Roommate. And I have this picture because I shot it. And I just wanted to show you that I took this picture because they were both so cool. And we sat there in that little lobby there and just talked for an hour, you know? What a cool show. You know, you bring something to a show like this. And I think I wanted to ask you about the difference between directing classics, maybe, you know, Shakespeare and sort of the old war horse plays and famous things and new plays. I mean, I certainly never heard of this show, The Roommate, which was really funny and very, very touching.
With Annie Fitzpatrick and Amy Resnick. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so is there a special experience, I guess, as a theater, you know, a theater artist, as a director, like to work with something that hasn't really been done 1,000 times or 100 or 10?
I got to say, I think coming back to Romeo and Juliet last week was surprisingly spectacular. Like, when you think about a theater show, like Romeo and Juliet, like that might make a lot of people like roll their eyes, like, ugh, that old thing. But man, I gotta tell you, like revisiting it was so, especially, you know, just with everything that's happening in our world last week, after the first read through, like I was crying. Like it was just so cathartic to watch other people experience that pain and that loss and that joy and that love. Oh gosh, it was so great. But yes, the other thrill on the flip side of doing a classic like Romeo and Juliet is a new play, something more like The Roommate, which is, you know, to do a text that hasn't really been done all that often is, and to know that you're bringing something new to people is really, really special because there's not, you don't feel any sort of pressure around your interpretation.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, I've seen Oklahoma 1,000 times and this was not my favorite. You know, nobody's going to say, well, you know, let's see how she does with The Roommate. You know, it's like, so it's totally your stamp.
Right.
Not
exactly.
Somebody else's. Another show. And then I have another question regarding this. And you know which one this is because Jeremy Douglas is a friend of mine and he, the music for this.
Yeah.
Silent Sky. And I just thought it was incredible. And what I wanted to ask you is, you know, I remember thinking in both cases that both of these shows, The Roommate and Silent Sky, were really well cast. You know, I don't fancy myself a theater critic, but, you know, I'm not above the occasional raised eyebrow if something feels questionable to me. But that wasn't the case here. So my question to you would be as a visiting director, somebody who came in to do these shows, do you have a say in casting? I mean, I want to give you credit for these if you did.
You know? I do. Yeah. I mean, I was working in concert, of course, with American Stage and with Stephanie. It's a collaboration of us throwing names into the hat and saying, oh, this person could be really great because they could bring this to it. Oh, but I know this person, they could be really, really great. And so it's sort of a mixed bag of us sharing ideas about what the role is and what are the qualities we really want to see people bring to it.
And that's, I would imagine, I'm just going to throw it out there, that it's probably even more like that now. I mean, your office is right, you know, even Stephanie, and, you know, what about this? What about, you're right there all the time.
Well, we were for about 2 weeks.
Sorry?
We were for about 2 weeks and then, you know, had to go home.
I forgot. Nobody's in the office anymore. You know, another, I want to slap the next person who says also the new normal. But, you know, the fact is, that's it. This isn't it. I mean, I haven't been to the Catalyst office since March. I think that's about to change. I mean, you know, we're doing masks and stuff, but, anyway,
yeah,
look, we only have a couple of minutes left, Kristen, but I wanted to ask you about the future of American stage, you know, both immediate, and we talked about immediate the next couple of months, and in the future, I mean, is there a 2021, say that fast, season, you know, in the wings? Is it sitting there in a file, like ready to, I hope we can unveil this on the world just like this? Does that exist already?
I wouldn't say that it's a fully formed file folder, but it is certainly a mishmash of ideas and hopes and dreams right now. We're in the process of figuring out what a season can look like next year, because yes, things are going to have to change. We're going to have to be leaner and meaner, if you can imagine that. You know, it's you know, of course, because of the losses that we've endured during this time, we're going to have to just be even more careful and more strategic about what we are choosing to put out there. You know, who knows? It could end up being, you know, a four season. It could be, and, you know, it could be less. I just don't know yet, because we're still processing through, you know, those things.
And again, with no bottom of the bucket in sight, how do you really plan for that? I mean, is it conceivable that you'd have, like you say, fewer shows in a season? Or, you know, we can't afford so many actors. We're going to have to do Fun Home with three people, you know, or something, you know. I know it's a business. You have to think about those things. So in other words, no answers really.
But I do feel very hopeful. I mean, even though we can't quite say what it's going to look like, because we just don't know yet. No. I do feel very hopeful and very excited about, you know, some of the things that we, you know, are thinking about and hoping for and dreaming about, as to what, you know, what are the meaningful stories that need to be told right now? In a way, we were kind of lucky that we were just about to announce a season, but we hadn't yet when all of this happened in March. And so some theater companies, you know, they had to cancel next season or make amendments to it, you know. But we didn't have that problem, because we were able to sort of hold on to those ideas. And then now we can sort of shape them to what next year will look like.
What is next Sunday for Shakespeare Light? What do we have coming up?
Oh, Bill, you have to be there. It's the Comedy of Errors, and it's directed by Chris Crawford.
Oh, great.
I'll be making my American stage debut. I'll be in it. Yeah, so I'm excited.
You're still an actor. That's good to hear. Yeah.
It's a great cast. It's super funny. Oh, my gosh. You're going to laugh your heads off. And so, yes, lots of more fun, interesting tricks will be revealed.
That's Sunday at 2?
2 o'clock, yes.
So Chris is direct. That's so cool. So he'll be the one in the NBC Tonight Show booth running all the cameras. Hey, it's been wonderful talking to you. And nice to meet you for the first time.
You as well. I just feel like I'm meeting St. Pete's celebrity, because I've been watching the sessions, and it's how I've been getting to know St. Pete. So thank you for what you've been doing.
We never run out of wonderful, talented folks to talk to. It's always a pleasure. Anyway, wishing you all the best, and we'll be looking for you Sunday.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Bill.
See you soon.
From stpetecatalyst.com.